CJLO 1690 AM, Grade A Explosives. That's what you're listening to right now, directly, at this moment. You just got done hearing a part of an interview that I did with Bonnie Trash when they were here for M for Montreal. And now, in this part of the hour, you'll get to hear, well, more of that interview, but also part of the session that they did here at the station. I split it up into two parts, in case you're wondering. They laid down three tracks. Thank you for that, Bonnie Trash people, if you happen to be listening. And I decided to split it up into two parts. I'll put two songs here in this part of the show, and then one to kind of round out the show. But if you want to hear them all in their entirety, feel free to go to cjlo.com or our YouTube channel, where they're all going to be posted up. We did a full video recording, so you'll get to see and enjoy that. Hopefully you'll get to do that many times at both places. Yeah, cjlo.com, where I'll be posting this back up. I should start off by telling you that the next part of the interview has a little bit of a joke, because I just got a vaccine the same day. So keep that in mind as this beginning of this question starts up, and enjoy.
Let me pose a question that's kind of related to horror that I've been kind of interested in. I was reading about a band at a festival I went to see, and their last album is about, you know, kind of like grief and trauma and, like, you know, their various addictions that they have. But the kind of framing of it is around mental health. And it's kind of, I've been kind of on the edge of thinking about where metal people lie in this, because on one hand, it's like you kind of immunize yourself, of all things. Vaccinations are important, people. Go get them. You kind of immunize yourself to some of the more, like, dark parts of the world and human nature. But at the same time, like, it gets you, you know, closer to the darkness, right? So there is kind of like this push-pull of it. Do you think ultimately it's better to kind of have that exploration? Or do you think that it actually is a hindrance, like a hurt to all of us that are kind of delving into these kind of darker themes?
I don't think it's a hindrance at all. Mm. I think for myself personally, the horror genre helps me to confront things in my own life. It also helps me to realize that there is more out there beyond what we see as well. And I think that's one of the most important things that the horror genre really encapsulates, is like the beyond, right? Of course, there's always play in horror where the things that scare you the most are the things that you can't see. And I think that for me, like, reflecting upon that and bringing that into my own life, it has only just been very, very positive. And I don't know about you, but I feel like a lot of, like, metal people or people who are into the horror genre always seem to be very pleasant and positive and wonderful people. So I think it is a really, it's a very interesting juxtaposition of being into this sort of, like, very dark subject matter, but also being, like, very positive. That's biased though too, right? But
yeah, there are some bands I've seen where the lead singer, like, glowers at you like you're going to be murdered in the next couple minutes. And then when you talk to them, they're very pleasant. I don't know what band I'd be referring to.
I don't know.
Incidentally, I saw you guys last night. Very good show.
Thank you. For
totally unrelated.
Bridging it into the metal zone too, I think with metal and the ability to explore darkness, I think it gives an empowering avenue that allows you to sonically match big feelings and layers of big feelings that perhaps in other sonic spaces, and it also depends on personality too, but perhaps in other sonic spaces you feel squashed, a little bit hindered. Mm. So having the ability to either listen, hear stories. I think that's what's so beautiful about metal, is how expansive it is. And I think part of what's underlying is it gives you an avenue to explore really deep, complex spaces. And grief is very complex. It grows. It's a darkness that follows you. It doesn't really leave, but you learn how to live with it. It's learning to live with that poltergeist. But that's a long journey, and it could be a lifetime of a journey. But I think that what's beautiful about the expanses of metal, I'm just repeating myself, is that you can sonically go through that. But I think that's what's but you also have a lot of different subgenres of metal too. You can catch yourselves into stories that help you be okay, or at least help you gain perspective on where you are in your life too.
And I think that's why we do what we do a lot of the time. Like, if we're having a shitty week and we get together for band practice and we're playing heavy music, it's like, yeah, we needed that.
Yeah.
The catharsis.
Yeah, exactly. The pressure release. Like, when you're watching really restrained, really confined music, like you were saying, it can feel sort of rigid. And that, yeah, the loud music is the avenue for catharsis and for exploring big feelings. That's the whole point. Or like when I was a teenager, like being a little bit beat up in a mosh pit was like in a friendly, we're all pals kind of way. Like, there is nothing like that feeling, regardless of what the genre is.
Yeah.
It is weird that kind of metal is one of the places where aggression is kind of the main driving force of it almost, and that you can, that it's acceptable that people can go into a circle and just run right into each other on purpose and be like, oh, okay, now, oh, someone fell down, now we're helping you up too. So it's like this weird violence tinged with like a compassionate force for it.
Yeah, like it's a zone where aggression is okay, but it's not, you obviously cannot express aggression in a way that hurts people. That's not fair. But
right,
to be able to feel that, I think it's really fruitful. And I don't know, I mean, we talk about having, when we were younger, feeling very aggressive but not knowing where to place that.
I mean, like, anger and aggression is a very powerful feeling. Like, it's, if you're looking to have a big feeling, that's one that gives you a lot of empowerment. And so if that's something that you need, that's like a really, it's the place to find it, right? Is like in aggression. But we also shouldn't pretend that myopic aggression isn't also happening in mosh pits or at metal shows too, right? Like, we've all been there too. And there's like, it's not all a healthy release, obviously. It has to be sort of mediated and understood and thought about.
It really is a collective improvisation. I think what's really beautiful now, though, too, especially in the shows that we play, we see more femme faces. We see people who are not just, it's not just cis men in the front. And I think that's really important. And by playing music or creating an avenue for queer aggression, for femme aggression to be out, it feels really good. And I hope that we bring that.
Yeah, the first punk band I saw that said, like, get all the women to the front. I felt like, oh my God, I'm gonna lose. I felt like when I was young, going to see loud, like, punk bands mainly, my greatest wish was like, oh, maybe one day I could like work the merch table on a tour, right? Like, you don't, when you don't see that shit, that's the sort of the limits of what you can expect. So that, like, yeah, getting to play these shows really does feel very healing. When we get there and we see those people, we see like tons of queer people, tons of like, it's the best. It's like the coolest.
I love it when older women are
there. Oh my God.
Like, women in their 60s.
I love that. Yeah.
Hell yeah, man.
Yeah. Yeah.
I probably have to take out that. Sorry.
I'll fix it in post. I'll do something with it. It'll still be in. We'll just have something for it.
Thank you. Thank you.
something else I've been really interested in lately, to completely change topics here, is I've been very interested in the idea of musicians unionizing. And, you know, as someone who's not a musician, I have no real ability to judge if that's even feasible to do. As musicians yourself, what do you think? Is that something that could be something that could happen? Could musicians actually unionize and maybe, and this is going to sound very weird, get paid to do what they do? It sounds weird coming out of my mouth, but
you need someone to bargain with, right? Who does the union bargain with?
I guess that's true. There's so many. I mean, I guess it's the split of Spotify now and all the labels that own
Fair.
It.
Fair. I mean, that's like totally
true. I mean, there technically is a musicians union in Canada. And I think it's effective when who you're bargaining with is benefiting your place within the union. But I think it really depends on a lot of different social factors that contribute to payment of artists and regular payment of artists. It would be wonderful. I don't know if unionizing is the way, but perhaps it is. That being said, there is a union. I think at the end of the day, there needs to be a value of cultural arts work. It's culture making in Ontario. I know that you have something to say there.
Sorry. I'm so sorry.
Sarah's just
prepping
the mic.
How about I finish this point and then I give it to you?
Sorry. Okay. Yeah. It's because I don't want to lose it in my brain. Okay. I got it.
Okay, you know what? I'll pass it to you. You do it. You do it.
I mean, it was kind of something that's funny, but also funny. I was reading about this, of course, but also commentary in regards to Spotify, the CEO making, you know, billions of dollars off of artists' music. And Lily Allen, I was reading I think it was an Exclaim article, and Lily Allen said something about, I make more money from selling feet pics on OnlyFans than my, you know, songs being streamed. So that's the reality that we're in right now. That's the reality.
Mm-hmm. Can I add to that?
Yes,
point?
And that was okay. Just what I wanted.
I think there is a way to feasibly allow or and have arts workers make a living. Across many different sectors, though, people who are contributing to culture or working in spaces that I think would fall under an umbrella of invisible labor are increasingly continuously being devalued, right? Mm-hmm. Or and the thing is, within music making or songwriting, you don't see what that creative process is. And that's one example of an invisible labor. Mm-hmm. Invisible labor often falls into feminized work, too, because it's deemed, what type of work is something that I will give some sort of monetary value to, which is why why invisible labor is often tied towards gender and sexuality and often within the intersection of race too. So it's very difficult to parse it out. I think holistically from a viewpoint, culture work provides from like a fiscal standpoint, it provides a lot of outside money. We're in Montreal for 4 days. We've paid for an Airbnb. We bought groceries. Mm-hmm. We've paid for Uber. We're going to go out to a place. We're going to also freely market all these things because we have to showcase that on our social media to show that we're doing stuff so that we can be more marketable in another space. Mm. So we're actually putting in a lot of effort marketing Montreal, being here, stuff like that. And it's dope. I love it, but it's also something where I realized that all that effort and all on being there is a fraction of a cent. Mm. It doesn't hold that value. However, the city has taken a bunch of money from us and I'm happy to invest in it, right? Yeah. So just looking at it from that standpoint, I think there needs to be an increasing value of people working in culture having the same amount of workers' rights as anybody.
It's really hard, like something that couple things there where one of the issues is there's the economic reality for everyone is so stark right now that we're not living in a world anymore where we can work 2 days a week at a bar and pay our rent and have some time off to make art and it doesn't really matter if you make money. So that's a really different context than, you know, starting a band 15 years ago, 25 years ago, 40 years ago, right? Yeah. And so when we're playing music, when we're on tour, It's a full day of work. We could be at a venue for 12 hours, right? We're paying for our own food. We're paying for our own fuel. We're working the whole time. And if the other realities, if the other economic realities were just working so well for us, if our rent was $250 a month, that would be pretty easy. I love playing shows, right? It's really fun. So it's in some ways it relies on us loving it.
To, yes.
And of course you love it. And, you know, you do it if there's no money in it, too. It's just that it starts to feel exploitative when you're starting to be like, oh, I'm actually spending money to do this. I'm like spending money to work. And I just think that's an important context. Like the cost of real estate, cost of rent, cost of food, cost of fuel. That's why this is a crisis or part of it.
Yeah. And throwing that in there, too. Looking at the overall value of art from a Western standpoint, especially post-industrial revolution, the artist was seen as the mystic. You brought something magical, and that was achieved through either being part of a class that allowed you the time to learn how to make art, hence why you have parlor music, or you are, what is the term? You're unique. You're
channeling
an
something.
You're channeling the divine, right? And so that's excellent. That's great. And it's very much an outcome-based position. When you look at it from another standpoint, creative-based work, creative-based labor is something that has the potential to inspire. Having the understanding that you need to value aesthetic, whatever aesthetic can be, gives you the ability to not only critically think about what your current social dynamics are, but also gives you the understanding that you can think of a better way of living. Mm.
And also the empowerment and the way to tell like stories, your own story, or it's important.
The hyper commercialization and capitalization of all aspects of life. But it means that you have to justify aesthetics from a capitalistic lens, right? You have to say like, oh, you know, when you make art, you bring this much money into the local economy. You do this, you do that. But the reality is that human beings deserve to have beauty in their lives. Mm. They deserve to have creative expression. They deserve to feel their feelings completely. And so if we have to justify it through capitalism, we'll try. But maybe that's really working backwards from the problem, right?
Perhaps it's a tired system.
Yes.
We talk about this a lot.
We spend a lot of time in the car.
Yes. I've opened up a can of worms here.
You did. No, it's good, though.